whether there's an adequate resource at a given site, for example, sufficient wind, geothermal energy potential, sufficient biomass, either waste wood or agricultural waste for a biofuel facility, issues like that. And for large developers, typically utility scale wind developers, for example, they have the funding, access to capital for those kinds of feasibility studies, but smaller projects do not. So the purpose of this fund is to provide funding for these small projects. And the source of the funding is money that the Attorney General received through a series of settlements from the 2000 and 2001 energy crisis, through settlements against various energy companies that were selling power on the wholesale level. And this is from a case called Reliant, which was one of the companies involved at that time. So what we'd be asking the Ways and Means Committee for is simply an increase in our other fund limitation to be able to spend the money for these studies. What we have in mind specifically is a maximum of $50,000 per study. There'd be a 25% cost share for the developer. If the project proves successful, then the study would be repaid so that the loan, the fund could be replenished. If the project did not go forward, say there were inadequate wind, inadequate other resources, the fund would not have to be repaid. We estimate that we could fund at least 30 projects this way. It's a program that would complement one that the Department of Economic Community Development has that is limited to public entities. And the program that they have does not nearly meet the demand for the requests they've received. For example, they've received over 30 applications and were able to fund only 8 projects at a total cost of about $300,000. And by their statute, they're limited to public sector applicants. This funding would be able to be used both for public and private sector, but it would be limited in size to 10 megawatts or less. So we're focusing on the small projects. This would again provide sort of the front end development of these small renewable projects that then could, for financing, use our tax credit, use our energy loan program, if they're eligible, take advantage of funding from the Energy Trust, and also some federal funding, such as U.S. Department of Agriculture for certain rural projects. So we think it's a good opportunity. We discussed this issue very briefly during our budget hearings last year, but at that point we did not have receipt of the funding, so we didn't spend a lot of time in the budget in Ways and Means, and that was why Ways and Means wanted us to bring it before the substantive committees. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or perhaps hear from Mr. MacArthur first.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and just hear from all three of you, and then we'll do questions.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mike MacArthur. I'm here in my capacity as the chair of the Renewable Energy Work Group. This first came to our attention when we were back in Sherman County working on projects, that it's very difficult to get small-scale projects to a point where they can become financeable. Sherman County itself was working on trying to put up one wind turbine, and the number of studies that you have to have done interconnect with the power company, transmission studies, environmental studies, land use permits, all those things need to be in place before you can really get financing, not to mention the resource study to see if your wind resource is acceptable. You have to send that data off to certified smart people who can testify that resource is adequate. That takes, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 probably to get a project off the ground. There's tremendous opportunity for smaller scale niche projects owned by people in Oregon, either in hydro, small-scale hydro, small-scale wind, other resources. And the Department of Energy has a great array of resources available once you can prove that a project's feasible. And what we're trying to do is move those projects from conception to feasibility. And this fund was created after the 2005 session wasn't able to fund it. Other funds were found, as Director Graney referred to, and it has been working. The fund is working now, and what the department's asking for is to continue that and continue to fund those projects and see what else we can do.
Anything to add?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robert Delmar, and I'll be presumably administering this program for the Department of Energy or helping to do that. And so far, just in being the point, the contact person for folks who would be developing these projects, I can say that there's a lot of potential projects out there. There is a tremendous need for this program. The REF program that's administered by the OECDD is meeting just a small portion of the projects that are coming to it. And by supporting a private funding model, we expect to see a lot more applicants, and we'd also think that we would be kind of uniquely qualified to help the private developers to obtain the other funds, federal tax incentives and whatnot, that the REF applicants are not able to obtain. So,
Committee, any questions? Senator Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this is any one of the three of you, really. If funds are taken from this fund, the settlement with Reliant Energy, where would those monies normally be going? I mean, whenever you move money from one place to another, usually there's somebody at the other side who's going to have less and somebody else is going to have more. So there must be restrictions on how that money is being spent. And what other programs would this money be competing for?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bates, the funding, the settlement funds from these series of court cases generally require that the funds go for a restitutionary purpose related to energy. It is fairly broad. To give you some examples, in the case of this Reliant case, there's about $3.5 million total. About $1 million of that went to Department of Justice for their Consumer Protection Program, $1 million to the Department of Housing for low-income weatherization, and they proposed to transfer $1 million to us for the feasibility funds. We've had other settlements in the past. The Williams settlement, for example, was almost $15 million, covers the same period, but was settled a couple of years earlier than this one. About half that money went directly to consumers in the form of refunds, a small amount to each consumer. And then, again, some of the funding went to low-income weatherization. Some went to low-income heating assistance. We received $1 million to work with schools that weren't eligible for the public purpose funds. So generally the purposes have been for energy efficiency or renewable energy or low-income assistance programs. But it's within that broad restitutionary justification to the court.
Mr. Chair, I mean, my problem is I don't have enough knowledge to really make a reasonable decision here. Is it better to put money into weatherization and save energy that way? Is it better to fund another program we couldn't fund last time, which was a wood stove program to deal with some pollution problems, get more energy out of it? Where's the best use of this money? I really don't know.
Well, and you may be in a position on ways and means of having to make a decision on it, but today all we need to do is listen to them.
Yeah.
Well, that's one good thing. Any other questions? Senator Girard.
Thank you, Chair Ibaka. I was privileged to take a tour of rural Oregon, and actually I think Mike was there, and John Day. We talked about cogeneration plants, and my understanding that comes under this heading, does it not? Does cogeneration...
Yes, very definitely.
The problem that they were having wasn't that they didn't have a mobile cogeneration plant, but it was having a constant market and having the electric companies buy the end product. Is there anything that we can do to help with that? Because Vernonia was here and also talked about that that would be advantageous to have a mobile cogeneration plant go to some of these disaster areas as well.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Girard, I think you touched on two issues. One is the mobile cogeneration technology itself, and that the expenses for that would be eligible for our incentive programs, and so this funding could help determine is there the supplies that this is going to be cost-effective or not. Could also help analyze the utility sales tariffs, and that does get into different issues, especially for the investor-owned utilities related to the Public Utility Commission standards, which are beyond our authority, but this kind of funding can help at least examine those issues.
Mr. Chair, Senator Grant, there's an opportunity for projects 10 megawatts or less to sell their power to the local utility. It's under the Public Utility Regulatory Policy Act, rules set by the Public Utility Commission, so there is a market for projects 10 megawatts or less in Oregon.
A follow-up question. Do you remember that question? And you were at John Day.
It was having to do with the cogen plant at Prairie City.
Oh, is that what it was?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rod. And I think some of the issues there are what happens to the green tags under that program, whether they're retained by the producer or not. But in fact, the utility is required to buy the power from a renewable project 10 megawatts or less.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. Just on this renewable energy project, the definition of that is we include some water projects, we don't include other water projects. What's the state of our law at this point?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, all water projects, as long as they're 10 megawatts or less, would be eligible. The only restriction is a size restriction that applies to all renewable resources, and that's because we're intending to address local community development that's not large utility size that typically does have their own financing for feasibility studies.
Yeah, I just want to know, the city of Pendleton is recharging the groundwater, mm-hmm. and they pump it back down mm-hmm. in, and when I understand there's technology out now where you can actually create generating plants when you mm-hmm. that water running downhill
yes.
creates water. So that would be part of this whole process.
Absolutely. Yes. Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, yes.
I always find it curious when we've got funds like this and you have various organizations that are asking for grants, how you decide who you're going to help and who you're not going to help. And I don't know that this is exactly like economic development money, but it's always interesting to me when the government makes decisions to give one entity an economic advantage over another, or to put one in a better position than another. So I'm curious what criteria you're using in divvying up the money.
Well, first, Mr. Chairman, we would intend to have a committee that is both our internal staff but also external stakeholders to review the applications and to rank them. And Rob, do you want to talk about some of the criteria?
Sure. Yeah, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I actually sat on the review board for the OECDD's program, and I think, I had the intention that our program would be similar to that, and we end up with, 15 to 20 energy experts and different folks from within state agencies and also from private industry that are able to look at the projects, and we would be looking for such things. And actually our criteria would differ from those of economic developments because they're looking for the community development side of things, and we would be focused more on the energy side of things. And some criteria might include dollars invested for kilowatt hours generated annually. We would certainly also look at some of the development criteria, such as jobs and economic growth, but primarily we'd be interested in the energy credentials of the project. And having this review, in the course of OECDD's program, has proven pretty valuable, and it's able to separate projects out that are not yet to the point of even being at a feasibility study. You can look at, you know, a resource supply, and with, you know, when it gets under this the board's noses and gets a good review, sometimes it's quite clear that there is no project with or without a feasibility study, whereas others, you know, you can say, yeah, that's an excellent idea that should be looked at a little closer.
So these requests can be made either by local governments or private entities?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, yes.
And if I heard you correctly, the one of the main criteria would be the financial viability of the entity, how much money they're putting in, how strong they are.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I would say both the financial viability and also the technical viability of the proposed project would both be key criteria that we would look at in evaluating.
Comment on this for me, because this is the part that I always, I guess, fumble with a little bit with these kind of things, is obviously we don't want to be investing in entities that are not going to be successful, because that doesn't help anybody. But if what we're doing is we're picking those that are the strongest and then adding money to their efforts, does that not give them, in a free enterprise system, an advantage that their competitors do not have, and then further separates their ability to compete from others?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I get maybe a good thing at this point would be to have an example of a project that's been accepted and rejected by a similar, you know, by the OECDD program. One example of one that did not get funding, and I don't actually have all of the details for the municipality at the top of my head, but the basics of the project was that they wanted to divert the wood waste from a municipal landfill and use that wood waste as a power production source. And they put together a proposal to gain funds for this study, and the review board was able to look at the proposal, see the quantity of wood waste that was being proposed, and it quickly became apparent that that quantity of wood waste was nowhere near the amount necessary to supply a renewable energy project. And so right away we could tell that there was not a project there that could be developed. Projects that, and actually the board that I was a part of, those awards are not yet made public, but the projects that were being favored by that board were, one, we were looking at some geothermal energy production, you know, stuff that has some technical history and has proven that it's possible but needs a specific resource assessment. And there's also been some hydro projects that have proven to be, that have done well in the funding process. But, you know, it's basically a matter of trying to get those that are not technically feasible from going any further in the process of development.
Mr. Chair, if I may, it's my observation that this fund has the effect of essentially being a field leveler. If you really need three components for a project. You need a resource, you need transmission, and you need market. And in smaller projects, don't always have the resource to determine those three things. And if you do have at least a prospect of those three things, then this fund can help get you to the point of getting the finances necessary to do the project.
And we were talking, will this apply just to these 10 megawatt projects? I mean, how's that going to be beneficial? I mean, really, we need 1,000 megawatt projects to solve some of our problems. So how does that all work into this?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, in a couple of ways. First, you're right. We do need hundreds, if not thousands, of megawatts of new resources, or we will in the next 20 years. And the incentive programs we have that I mentioned before, that once these projects get proven their feasibility, they can take advantage of the tax credits and the loans and the energy trust funding. Those are available for the large projects as well. Also, the renewable portfolio standard that was passed this last year has provision that a third of the 25% by the year 2025 should come from smaller resources, smaller renewable resources. And this funding, feasibility fund, can clear one of the paths for these smaller resources. And I think there's benefit to the economy generally in Oregon from, I think, renewable resources generally, you do have very specific economic benefits when you have small projects that are locally developed.
Anything else, committee? All right. Thanks for the update. Great.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Appreciate
Chairman.
It
Appreciate
very much.
It very much. Thank you.
Committee, we had hoped that we would have some bills over from the House by today, but they're not through through the system yet. I would imagine on Wednesday we're going to have some House bills that we hopefully will be able to dispatch one way or the other on Wednesday so that we are not here on Friday. And then possibly next week some more House bills. Don't know yet. But as far as today goes, we're adjourned. Okay.